Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Ballard Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, and drunkest on them all, BFD, who should be calling in now any second, I think. Hey, how's it going?
I am doing very well. Sorry to everybody for being a bit late, as I was still working.
What it allowed, they never were going to know. But it doesn't matter. But you know, it does matter. Did you know
it does
that
matter,
this past
Big Matt.
Weekend? Did you know that this past weekend and last weekend were unusual occurrences or nothing new, and that the Texans just have not played well this season?
Well, but they were 6-2. They're playing great. They're 6-3. They're playing fabulous. They're the best team ever in history. The record doesn't. I mean, you know, having pound doesn't matter. The record's the only thing that matters, Matt.
Yeah. Well, after being 6-3, the Texans are now 6-5. They've lost two in a row, and now after they've lost two in a row, and the results have changed, everyone is starting to lose their minds that Houston may lose the division. And they may actually not be a good football team. And that Brock Osweiler is human garbage to the quarterback position. Now, we talk about this all year. We talk about Masai all year. You know, this is really nothing new. Houston hasn't been playing good football this year, but they've won games. You know, in spite of it, because they have a very good defense. You know, they run an offense that controls the clock. They hold opponents less than 20 points. And they just kind of hold on from there and win these close games. But these last 2 weeks, they haven't, and they've lost. And the end results are the only thing that have changed. So, BFT, rather than start off with the usual, you know, petulant whining and, you know, complaining about what this team has done wrong and, you know, why they aren't good and why we're frustrated by the jogging in place, just by the talent on this team and the decisions in the quarterback position, while everybody else is doing that this week, we're going to do the opposite because we zig while everybody else zags, unlike Bill O'Brien. So, what did you like about this game?
What I like about this game, you can talk about how Quentin Dempse blew coverage, and he did. You can talk about how Bernard McKinney blew coverage on the touchdown pass to Hunter Henry. He did. Not badly. It was, I mean, Phillip Rivers read the heck out of that. It was a perfect play call against the it looked like we were playing kind of a Tampa 2 cover with McKinney supposed to be taking the deep. But it was a beautiful pass by Phillip Rivers. I mean, he nailed it. He threw it so fast, the only person who had time to react was Hunter Henry. So quickly, I should say, timing-wise, not fast as far as velocity. The Texans defense lost the best player in the NFL this year with J.J. Watt going out. I'm not even going to argue that point, whether or not J.J. Watt is the best player in the NFL, because he is. So deal with it. He is so disruptive. He gets to the quarterback. He leads the league in sacks, and he's the best run defender in the league at end, or wherever he decides to line up on that particular play. He is just an off-the-charts fantastic player. And the Houston Texans defense held the Chargers to 21 points on Sunday. And then you might be saying, well, you know, we still gave up three touchdowns to a team that scores 29 points a game on average this year and has played some good teams while doing so. This is not a lightweight team. Phillip Rivers is, believe it or not, he is an elite quarterback in the NFL. And it took a blown coverage and it took a stupid penalty by Kareem Jackson to really help the Chargers score two of those touchdowns. So if you want to look at the good, let's look at number one. I've been Honest Jock all season. And again, I don't know how he plays so well if I'm Honest Jock so much, but Bernard McKinney is absolutely beautiful to watch play. This man is a monster. Brian Cushing, hey, you got to deal with it. McKinney is already a far better player than you are right now. He is so offensive right now. He is a joy to watch. A.J. Bouye, of course, is having a fantastic season. He struggled a little bit the last couple of weeks, but let's be honest, he has had a fantastic season. Jonathan Joseph does not seem to be slowing down. Kareem Jackson has struggled in coverage this year, but he's the best tackling cornerback in the NFL. The guy is just a beast. And then you have Whitney Merciless and J.D. Clowney who create havoc. I admit, and we're trying to stay positive, but I admit when I'm watching Houston Texans play, I have almost literally no interest watching the offense. But I get really excited watching the defense. I get excited by the way they fly to the ball, by the way that they're still doing their damnedest to make plays even without the best player in the NFL today. And it's to me, I could literally watch a game and not watch an offensive snap and be completely happy, and I'd probably be excited by the game because it's such a fun team to watch defensively. That's enough of a rant. Matt, to you.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's very important to appreciate what this defense has done. And again, you exactly mentioned it, that they held the Chargers to 21 points. Everywhere, you know, around this team, they've, you know, excelled and filled in the spots without J.J. Watt really well. I think really the only thing I have to add to what you said is that Romeo Crennel has done a very good job manufacturing a pass rush because Merciless has had trouble, you know, being one versus one blocks. Same thing with Clowney in the pass rush. And I mean, that's really the only thing that you haven't had there. I think is very important. But yeah, even without the best player in the NFL, this defense has stayed, you know, very good. They're a top 10 defense again this year. And it's been really surprising, you know, how good they've been after they lost J.J. Watt. And so we've kind of seen that they've fallen from, I think they were 12th in DVOA defense entering this week, and they fell from 6th to 12th without Watt, which is so much better. I was afraid they'd fall to like 20th maybe. But for me, what I liked about this game, one of the key things I like was that Max Bullitt is wearing the J.J. Watt arm brace or elbow brace. And so, like, if this was, you know, an RPG like Final Fantasy or World of Warcraft or Diablo 2 or a game like that, that's like a blue rare item where it gets like plus 50 to your strength. And so you're talking about, you know, Brian Cushing having to worry about Bernard Jim McKinney. I think Brian Cushing would have to worry about Mr. Bullitt with him having that elbow brace on. I mean, I think he's going to be flying towards the ball. He's going to be, you know, punching guards in the stomach and knocking backwards and making tons of plays. And if it doesn't happen on defense, he's going to make him a very special teams player, which he already is. The other thing I really liked, too, was I miss Will Fuller. I miss you so much. It was so much fun watching you in the first 2 weeks. But I had a little bit of hope that this team may actually be good when he's flying down the field, just running past. You know, not even making moves, just running flat past defensive backs. It was just so much beautiful, so much fun. And so this game, he had 4 catches, I believe, for 70 yards. One of them was really incredible where he ran past double coverage, just sprint past both of them, the corner and the safety, made a great over-the-shoulder catch, and the Oswald plays perfectly on the sideline. And so I really miss watching Will Fuller do that and actually do something other than catch 2 screen passes for, you know, 7 yards and then not really do anything else other than that. And the other thing I really liked was A.J. Bouye, and I'm starting to – I don't like paying guys after one season, but it's been, you know, 12 games now. He's been spectacular. And so this one, a lot of people were, you know, dogged on him because of the penalties. I watched the condensed version, so I think it's a C replay of the penalties. I don't know if they're a ticky-tacky or not. But if you remove those penalties, he really only had 2 missed plays. The one was the slant route he gave up where he kind of tripped and he tried to break on the ball. And the second was the touchdown he gave up where Quinn Demms was supposed to help out over the top. And he has good coverage there. He has great coverage, but he just misses the ball. And Tyrell Williams is able to make that catch. But he made, you know, 4 or 5 really great stops to stop first downs and even like first down plays. He swapped passes away. Quinn Demms' interception was the direct result of an A.J. Bouye tip pass. And so he's been spectacular this year too. And so I watched this game. Those are like the 3 things that I really loved and enjoyed.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Will Fuller. I just focused on the defense, hoping you would grab Fuller and run with him a little bit. And Will Fuller returning kicks, which actually frightens me to death as well. But, you know, he's just such a different returner than Tyler Irvin is that, you know, you have a chance that you're going to break a big one, I think, and not have the ball hit off a shoulder pad and go to the other team. Oh, we're staying positive. We're not going to go negative. But I think you made some great points about that. And one more thing that we can talk about on the positive is the evolution of C.J. Fedorowicz from being a net negative for the team into being a multi-target catching force in the middle of the field. God, I couldn't get the words out I wanted. This is what I expected from him when we drafted him. is that somebody who'd be able to do this in the middle of the field. I expected a lot more than the nothing burgers he's put up the last couple of years. He is creating separation. He is catching the ball. Hey, that's a thing. He had a problem with drops in college. So, you know, that's been nice to watch as well.
Yeah, you know, Fedoris is a pretty good tight end, and he's gone from, like you said, like a complete absolute nothing where Ryan Griffin's out, you know, out producing him, to being a good tight end, which he's come a long way these last three seasons. But other than that, I really don't have anything, you know, positive to say about this game. So let's go ahead and check out the Brockometer, which you get in Brock Bottom at the lowest level, Brock Osweiler on the second level, Brocky Oker in the third, in the, you know, the center. And then the fourth little, you know, part of the spinner is Glock Osweiler, and the fifth is Godweiler. And so in this game, he was 22 of 37, 6.6 yards an attempt, which is, you know, on the positive note, 1.4 yards more than his average attempt this year, where he was 32nd during the season. And he threw zero touchdowns and three interceptions. So where would you rank his performance of this game, and where is he at on the season so far? Is he still at Brock Bottom on your end?
He's phrasing. Yeah, he's definitely still at Brock Bottom. He's just it would have been better if he wouldn't have had the three interceptions. I mean, the 22 for 37, okay, that's a little bit better on the accuracy. The 6.6 yards per attempt, that's like, you know, Hall of Fame material for him at this point in time. But the three interceptions and the last one, a lot of people want to discount the last one, and I think that's a completely wrong thing to do, because the fact is that his guys aren't even close to the play. You know, you have to give the guys a chance to actually get down the field. It was nice he was able to throw the ball 45 yards to get into the end zone, but if it's only San Diego Chargers defenders in the end zone at that point in time, then what's the point? So
yeah.
That was horrible. You can't discount a pass that was that poor, that lacked such context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, you know, you're right. The problem was, you know, three interceptions. But again, like, his one good trait that he has, I think this is, I've been thinking about Osweiler, and I think this is the best way I can sum him up after watching these 12 weeks, is that the one good trait that he has is his arm strength. You know, that's the one plus, but it's not so good and, like, you know, so great. It's not like Cam Newton's arm or Jameis Winston's arm, that it can override a lot of the mistakes that he, or a lot of the problems that he has. And so, the two biggest problems are the first is ball placement and the second is decision making. And we saw both those problems throughout this game, throughout the season, and all these interceptions. And the first interception, that rollout, he does a good job evading pressure, seeps out of the pocket. And you watch a lot of these quarterbacks, they make up their mind if they're going to go for it and run or if they're going to try to sit and make something happen and throw it. Osweiler doesn't make that decision at all. He keeps moving on the run when he has plenty of space where he can stop, sit down, set his feet, or just go ahead and take off and go for it. And instead, he tries to throw on the run to DeAndre Hopkins. And it's a pass that needs to go towards the sideline. You know, he has Casey Hayward on his back. Instead, he throws on the run, misses him a foot inside, allows Hayward to make that interception. And that was on first down, too. That's a first and 10 throw. That's not like third and seven where you're trying to pick up a first. That's on first and 10. And it's kind of, you know, it was just an inexcusable throw and it was a bad decision. The second interception was just a terrible throw where he overthrows C.J. Fedorowicz by like 15 yards. And I think if you wanted to have like the version of the Hoyer floater from last year, I think that's Osweiler's right there, where he just skyrockets it past him. It was a right to the safety. And then that was the second interception. The third was the, you know, the second Hail Mary, which happens, you know, and Jalen Strong isn't healthy right now to do the one thing he's good at, which is catching Hail Marys. But then the other pass that really was bad was the one at Braxton Miller on 4th-and-2 with 4.5 minutes left, where they're down by 11. Miller has a great route. He's open. And Osweiler misses him so wide by about a foot or so. And then he's also throwing with such, you know, velocity that Miller's having to dive and catch like a line drive off the bat. And there's just no way to make that catch. And it's so far away from him, and he has no shot. And then the Texans they're able to convert that easy – and what it should be like a pretty easy throw. Like it's something that you have to make. And so because of his ball placement issues, he's not consistent enough to lead the drives. You keep things going. And when you have Lamar Miller run for three yards per carry and run the ball 20-plus times, this is how you score 10 points. And so I still have him at Brockmeyer just because that one game hasn't happened yet. like that you know, Brian Hoyer in Kansas City against Kansas City in the playoffs game hasn't happened yet. That terrible back-breaking pick six against Tennessee hasn't happened yet. So until that play happens, then I'll drop it down to the lowest level of hell. But it just hasn't happened yet. So, yeah, this was another bad performance. You know, he made some throws, actually, to Fuller. He made some throws to Hopkins and to Fedorowicz, but he wasn't good this game. And he wasn't that good against Oakland, but Oakland has terrible linebackers, and he's able to attack the middle of the field because the Raiders are, like, the worst linebackers in the NFL. But yeah, like, it was just another bad performance from him.
Yeah, I'm sticking with him being at rock bottom. There's no way I can pull it up from there. When you're the worst quarterback in the NFL, and he really is, he is truly, in fact, I will go to DVOA, which I forgot to do, and I'm just going to babble just a little bit so I can get to that button, is they have him as the worst, -451. You know,
who's
here's what counts.
32nd.
They've got 33 players ranked. He's number 33. Number 32 is Joe Elite. Sorry, Mosquito. EAF Flacco, and then Ryan Obokubi Fitzpatrick, and then Josh McCown, because we all know that McCowns just aren't going to succeed as an NFL player or really anywhere. I know Rivers doesn't listen to the cast.
Anything in general.
And then, right, I wasn't going to go there. And then Dana is next on that list. So you gotta say, when Brock Osweiler is leading that list of just truly elite quarterbacks from Keenum, McCown, Fitzpatrick, and Flacco, and is the king of the worst DYAR in the league, that's saying something. That's truly elite status.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's been numerically the worst quarterback in the league. And I guess really the only thing, like I said in the email threads and throughout this year, is that whenever he's throwing deep, it can get over the other problems that he has. But when he only completes one deep pass in a game, he's just nothing. And I really compare him to Joe Flacco, because Flacco, when he's throwing the ball deep downfield, he's a good quarterback. But whenever you're having him throw 12-yard passes, intermediate passes, it doesn't – you're not seeing advantage of what he does well at all. And so after this game, now, again, they're 6-5. Here comes the negativity. Here comes the realization that the Texans aren't as good as that their record indicated. After all the words were spilled and all the words were said, or I guess all the words were typed and the words were said, now here it's all come. And now, as a result of it, we're getting the bubblings and grumblings that Bill O'Brien should start Tom Savage. And so the first question we have here is from Damon Dan, and he said, in the offseason, we told him that Savage did not play unless Oz is injured. And so he said, are you predicting an Oz injury? If so, when? I say no, just because of pass blocking. It wasn't good last week, but Joey Bosa is incredible. And, I mean, he doesn't get hit hard enough, really, to expect an injury. And then the second is, how well do you think Savage would actually play? So I guess I got two questions for you, BFD. The first is that, do you think Tom Savage should start? And how well do you think he would play if he actually did?
If they're going to keep him in – Mike – I don't know if he uses his real name on the blog. That guy who writes for us, who goes by the handle, Mike.
Yeah, he uses his name.
He uses his name. That's awesome. That's good paying attention skill there. Paying attention score, 0. That Mike wrote a post today that really goes into a lot – that. It's more than just Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler is part of the problem. But when one thing that I do for a living is, I'm an IT security guy. And so I'm really focused on what is the root cause analysis on a problem. There could be multiple issues at risk. But what I have to do is if a company that I'm consulting for has had a penetration of some sort, talking about phrasing. They've had a penetration of some sort. I need to understand where it happened, right? So I need to do that work and understand, okay, this is the root cause. They were using administrator on every server on their network, which I've actually seen. So, that was their credentials to get onto the server. So that's the root cause, is you're stupid. You were using bad passwords. So doing the root cause here, it's more than just Brock Osweiler. He is part of the problem. To me, the biggest problem is Bill O'Brien. The offensive scheme is utter and absolute. Hi, Texan doesn't want me to cuss anymore. It's trash. It's absolute trash. I mean, I don't know how you can come to any other conclusion when you watch this team play, when you watch this game, and I know I'm stealing a little bit of thunder, but I think this is a prime example because it's something I brought up on our listserv earlier this week, is Lamar Miller. So Lamar Miller averaged 3 yards a carry, I'm sorry, for the game against the Chargers. Lamar Miller, who is a speed demon, who does well out in space, and who is somebody who hits the outside run with decent vision, and you're calling plays. You sign him in the offseason, then you put on a bunch of weight, have him put on a bunch of weight, so you take away his number one skill from him, which is the speed. And not only that, because of the extra weight, you're putting more stress on his joints. The whole thing is so stupid. So, and then you're asking him to run like he's Larry Zonka or John Riggins or somebody like that. And I'm sorry, I'm getting ranty, I dig, because this one really fires me up because I was so excited about this signing in the offseason. This is the disconnect between Bill O'Brien as an offensive play caller and Bill O'Brien as a personnel man. If you're gonna sign a guy like Lamar Miller, you need to use him like, hey, let's use the New England Patriots as an example. Let's get him out in space like Deion Lewis or James White. Let's do that in the passing game. Those guys average over 10 yards a catch. Lamar Miller averages 5 yards a catch. We have no idea how to use his abilities in the open field. So to go back and say, well, Brock Osweiler is the problem, yes, but he's part of the problem. The root cause is Bill O'Brien is a grossly incompetent offensive coordinator, is that he doesn't put his guys in a position to succeed, and Lamar Miller is case number one of why he's such a poor offensive coordinator. It's not George Godsey. This is Bill O'Brien. This is what he was brought in to do, was to make the offense click, and he can't do it because he doesn't understand the personnel he's got on his team and how to use them. So, breathe. That's what Mike's post today went into, is who to credit, who to blame. The blame is on Brock Osweiler, but the root cause is Bill O'Brien and misusing his players. I can go back to Brandon Brooks versus Jeff Allen, drafting of Xavier Suofilo versus a real quarterback. There's a lot of things. There's personnel issues. There's scheme issues. Bill O'Brien is the root cause for all these things. End rant.
Yeah, I would still say that Osweiler is the problem, and it just goes back to, like, I know he hasn't played as well as he's playing Denver, but again, like, Gary Kubiak gets a lot more of any quarterback, and just because it's real, you know, it's kind of a, like, I think I could probably run Kubiak's offense in some, at least at like a high school level, or maybe like a D5 level, because it sets up just easy throws consistently, and Osweiler took that. And then threw some deep passes. And even though I don't think Osweiler was ever that good to begin with, I know he had a lot of bad decisions, and he was very lucky with the interceptions that he threw that he was able to get away with in the last year. And so I think the biggest problem with him, just because the offense has all these weapons around, but the quarterback play, again, is 32nd in the league. And I think that's more in Osweiler than Bill O'Brien. But whenever it comes to Tom Savage, I don't think Tom Savage should start. I don't think he should play. And it's like, you know, you invest in Osweiler for 2 years. I think you kind of have to see what you have with him and see if you can develop him and groom him any more than he already is. I mean, he's 26. Quarterbacks usually peak at 29, 30. So maybe see if some more time and playing this offense around these guys and keep your investment like that, I think is better than you moving to Savage. And the thing about Savage is I don't have any faith in Savage being good. I mean, I think he's similar to every other quarterback the Texans have drafted or have had the last few years, where he's tall and has a big arm. He started that game against Indianapolis his rookie year, and that's all he showed off. He didn't show off any pocket awareness. He didn't show off any accuracy. And again, he's a rookie starting his first game, and the only thing he did is throw a ball downfield. And you know, he's looked good in the preseason, but he's looked good in the preseason against second and third string guys, against the 75th guys on the roster. And so I don't think there's anything you can extrapolate from that. And I mean, us, you know, nerds talking about, you know, who write about this team and talk about this team, and then you know, the fans who you know, watch this team, we don't know nearly as much as the Texans do it when it comes to Tom Savage. They're the ones who see him every single day. They're the ones who watch him in practice. They're the ones who watch him when he goes against the first-team defense. They know him, you know, better than anybody else does. And if they liked Tom Savage, if they thought Tom Savage should be a starting quarterback, they wouldn't have signed Brock Osweiler. They wouldn't have signed Brian Hoyer. They wouldn't have signed Brian Mallett. They would have used him as the quarterback, and they didn't, because if anything, he's right now he's just a guy who can throw the ball downfield and at least knows the offense. And so I think if there's anything you could get out of him, they would have already done so. So I don't think Savage should start. I can't even tell you how well he would play. My answer is just probably bad, just because he hasn't. The Texans haven't given him any opportunity at all.
Yeah, you make a very good argument. The only reason I really have to base upon the let's give Tom a chance is, number one, Nicolas Cage. I mean, let's just be honest here. What a hunk. really, it's because he's something different, because he's going to bring you a slightly different skill set. Brock is, but I'm not no longer as sure as that as I was, because Brock did a really good job, has done a good job scrambling this year. He kind of looks like, he's kind of flopping all around the place, but he gets yards. He's got that long, loping stride, and he gets yards, and he can do something with his feet. That's something Tom Savage really brings to the table that has in the past that's kind of attractive. But it's just making change for change's sake. Again, when you start, okay, we're going to do the same dadgum thing over and over and over again and expect something to change, then that to me is a problem. That's why I would be for it. That's why I really appreciate Mike's article today, post today, about, this is more than just about Brock Osweiler. This is more about, he goes more with Godsey. I think it's more Bill O'Brien, because Bill O'Brien's the one who's been saying, I'm taking over offensive play calling responsibilities. So, yeah, that's the only reason I would say, okay, let's give Savage a chance. But your argument is just as good, if not better than mine, that, hey, we've invested in the guy, and if Tom Savage has actually shown something, we'd have already given him that chance. Which should really tell you just how hard you should hit your own head against the wall.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if you want to make a change with the scheme. Make a change with what you can control, not necessarily the personnel, because I don't think Tom Savage is going to be as good as Osweiler. Osweiler's been the worst quarterback in the NFL this year, so that probably wouldn't be true. But I think you're going to make a change in the scheme. And I think the biggest problem really with this team is that they're not able to run the ball up the middle. And it's because Nick Martin isn't there, they have Greg Manx. And then instead of Brandon Brooks, they have Jeff Allen. And they're just not able to drive guys off the line of scrimmage. They're not running the ball up the middle. And Bill O'Brien just hasn't adapted. I know Miller averaged 3 yards a carry, but when he was running over the tackles and getting outside, like that run where he ran right over Dwayne Brown in between him and Sua Fio on outside, not, it wasn't even an outside zone play, it was just a dive play. He picked up 15 yards. Nakeem Hunt had two big runs outside. And so I think that's the biggest issue is with the run game. And the biggest problem with the run game is Bill O'Brien just hasn't adapted, and they're not getting those guys out in space. So I think if you're going to make a change, the change needs to come from the scheme, not necessarily personnel. And, if you have Savage, and then what do you do with Osweiler next year? He's just $18 million sitting there on your bench. So I think you kind of have to play him in a way and then just hope he gets better. But I think if you're going to make a change, you're going to draft a quarterback in the draft this year with the first or second round pick. And that's where your change is going to come from, not from Tom Savage or Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, I mean, let's just take a quick look, and it'd be good to have some quantity numbers to go along with this. But looking at Football Outsiders offensive line stats, Houston running left end is 11th, left tackle is first. A lot of that was kind of a flop, but it's still first. Mid guard 20th, right tackle 28th, right end 7th. Now, look, I might not be the brightest bulb on the
team. It's similar too.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's by yards per carry. But, it's or just the line yards, technically.
Yeah.
But, look, I may not be a head coach in the NFL today, but I can look at those numbers and say, okay, I can run right tackle for 2.93 yards, banging my head there, or I can go to the outside and almost double that. So which am I going to keep doing? Oh, I'm going to keep running right tackle. I'm going to keep running right mid guard. It is so incredibly stupid. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think right tackle numbers are down. Even when Derek Newton was healthy, they were down. And that's more of Jeff Allen than Newton, because I think they dropped from 16th to 30th with Jeff Allen right guard, whenever you have him working with Derek Newton instead of Brandon Brooks. And you're talking about just in line yards, even yards for carry are similar. I made the point, I think, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, that the Houston Texans don't have Pro Football Reference Gameplay Finder. It's not that hard to find these numbers. It's not that hard to look at what they're doing and just not working. So, I mean, it's just that part is just very, very perplexing. And the Osweiler stuff, you know, I can understand somewhat because they had to have a quarterback. But the run game is something they can directly control if they haven't. The other thing that's kind of interesting about this game, too, offensive line-wise, was that Osweiler was underneath a lot of pressure in this game. And the pass blocking has been good so far this year. If you look at the aggregate numbers, if you look at pressure rate, just a sack rate, you know, they've been good. They've done a good job, you know, giving him plenty of time to throw. But in this game, he was sacked once, and he was hit 9 times. And Joey Bosa devoured both Dwayne Brown and Chris Clark. The interior blocking had problems blocking, but the bigger problem was they were just having issues miscommunicating. Every time San Diego blitzed, they were missing guys. You know, Jay Proch did a bad job picking up the blitz a few times. Jeff Allen did a poor job switching over. Greg Maines got beat on some bull rushes too as well. And so, like I said, like Houston's been good pass blocking this year. So are you worried at all that this sort of bad pass blocking is going to continue for the rest of the year? Or is it just the case of the San Diego Chargers have a good blitz scheme and Joey Bosa is just, ridiculous?
No, I think there's preponderance of evidence right now is that Houston actually does pass block pretty well. Joey Bosa, wow. What a heck of a game. Goodness gracious. I really was not big on him coming out of college, and, man, I was wrong about that. He ate everybody's lunch on Sunday. He was so disruptive, and I just did not expect that from him. Wow. So, I mean, it's like watching, the poor man's J.J. Watt out there, really. So I'm not overly concerned. When it comes to Jeff Allen, I'm concerned. When it comes to Chris Clark, I'm concerned. Xavier Suafield has not been bad this year. Manx has actually been pretty decent pass pro. And, of course, Dwayne Brown, he's not the Dwayne Brown from, 2010 or 2011, but he's still not bad. But one thing Brock Osweiler does have, he has a little bit of escapability to him. He does have the ability to make a little room for himself, and I think that's really helped the pass pro for the Texans this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think Chris Clark had some issues about getting his doing against Bosa, and Bosa is incredible. Like you don't watch defensive ends, like he doesn't even look that strong, and he's so quick, but like he's really strong though too as well. Like he's a big guy. And so, like, you don't see guys with, like, his size. Like, if you don't see guys with his weight, with his type of build, let alone his speed. And he also has really great hands, too. He's a really patient pass rusher. Yeah, and, I mean, his hands are just something else. So, I mean, I think this is more of a one-time game sort of deal. I think the pass blocking is going to be better moving forward. I think Joey Bosa was awesome. And he wasn't just beating Chris Clark. Like, he was beating Dwayne Brown over and over again, too. And he was just constantly wreaking havoc. We can go ahead and move on to the defense now. We already appreciated them, gave them the love that they deserve. And the biggest problem in this game was, it was 10 guys playing great, and the biggest issue there was Quinnen Demps. And I really have no idea why teams haven't attacked him earlier in the year. He was a liability last year. The Buffalo Bills game last year was a great example of how they isolated him with deep passing routes and then saw which side of field he was going to. So that's where we're going with the ball every single time we throw deep. And he's just too slow to attack the ball. But really the only good thing about him is that he's a veteran. He knows where to line up. He knows how cold coverage is. He has an idea of where the ball is going to be. But he just is limited athletically, and he can't cover very well. And so all three of those touchdowns had direct implications from Quinnen Demps' play. The one that A.J. Bouye gave up, Quinnen Demps is supposed to be the safety to help out on that. He wasn't, around at all, too. He was staying in the back of the end zone, not doing anything. The pass to the touchdown pass to Inman, that was 56 yards. Inman's lineup in the slot. He does a stop and go and just completely leaves Quinnen Demps topsy and turvy. And Quinnen Demps is staring in the backfield too on that, which doesn't make any sense because he's looking in the backfield at that cut, and Rivers is already taking he's already 2 steps into his drop back, And that was an awful play. And the Hunter Henry touchdown you talked about, when McKinney maybe supposed to guard him. McKinney has the middle of the field. He's passing that one past. If he goes past him, that's Quinnen Demps' man. Demps just stands in the end zone, doesn't even react to the pass at all. And that was on him, too. So all three of those touchdown passes came on passes out of the slot, designed to attack Quinnen Demps. and they beat him all three times, and they scored 21 points out of that. And he's the worst player on this defense, and the team just haven't attacked him at all so far this year.
No, and that was one of the comments I made during the Hair of the Dog thread, is that, okay, Kareem Jackson's not quite the cover guy he was. He got really good for a couple of years there, for several years there after his rookie campaign. But he's not the cover guy he once was. Jonathan Joseph's been a beast. A.J. Bouye clearly has been, you know, excellent this year. So it's really been perplexing. If you're the offensive coordinator for the playing against the Texans, why you're not just going right at us, right up the middle of the field, right up the gut. That's one thing that the whole Kansas City Chiefs game really threw me off, is because they didn't go with Travis Kelce as much as they should have. You're making some weird sounds over there, Matt, by the way.
No, I'm sorry, I burped on accident.
Okay. It sounded more than that. But anyway, so why haven't teams been going after Demps has been a bit perplexing, and I think, unfortunately, you'll see that a little bit more because of the way that Philip Rivers has so much success hitting the middle of the field and going right, almost right at Quentin Demps.
Yeah, I guess the biggest thing, which is I'm confused why teams haven't attacked him like they did last year and what they could do this year. I think the Jets game, too, is not a good example, but they just weren't able to complete their deep passes. There was a lot of drops from the Jets receivers in that game. So, I don't know, do you think this is something that Aaron Rodgers is going to look to exploit this weekend, that Andy Dalton can exploit, that Marcus Mariota can exploit? Or is this just kind of a, you know, one-time sort of thing? Or are you afraid that this problem is going to be much bigger as the season goes on?
Well, let's look at the three guys that you mentioned. You got Aaron Rodgers. It just sounds like you're making all sorts of noise over there. It's just really weird. That Aaron Rodgers has Richard Rodgers, and he has Jared Cook is healthy again, and he was going to Cook on Sunday night, can't remember when they played. You got Andy Dalton has Tyler Eifert, who is a major, major matchup problem, just regardless. And we can't use the problem is we've lost A.J. Bouye playing that tight end role as he was doing earlier in the season when he was matching up against the tight end because of the loss of Kevin Johnson. And then you have Marcus Mariota, who has Delanie Walker, who has been eating safety souls all year. I mean, dude's been in beast mode this year. So all those are really extraordinarily poor matchups for us if we have to rely on Quentin Demps and Andre Howell to – and it's not Howell can't cover. Howell isn't 6'6". Howell's 5'10". So there's a lot of size mismatches and a lot of talent mismatches in the middle of the, field for us for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I do think Kareem Jackson will cover tight ends as well, too. You know, against Green Bay this week, he'll probably cover Cook. And, you know, McKinney has some problems in coverage, but, you know, he's 6'6", 250, and that's part of it. I'm just more worried about deep passes than tight ends specifically, because I think it's a real big issue whenever you only have half the field. When you have half the field that you can't cover with any help from your tight end, especially in the slot where, if, you know, you're running any sort of zone coverage at all, that's a huge quadrant that teams should be able to attack. And I can see it being a bigger problem going forward now that this has happened against San Diego and he's going against good quarterbacks going forward. What was your favorite J.J. Watt play? What was your J.J. Watt favorite defensive play of the game this week?
That one's so easy for me. One thing San Diego did that the Texans did not adjust on, and once again, it's on Bill O'Brien, is that the Chargers were going out of the way to chip Merciless and Clowney. They were really making sure. So there is a play when Tyrell Williams, the wide receiver, was lined up kind of in a slot tight end type position. He was more like a tight end than anything else. Whitney Merciless on the outside and Bernard McKinney lined up at inside linebacker. Tyrell Williams chipped the crud out of Whitney Merciless. I mean, it was a big hit. I don't think Merciless was expecting it all the way. It threw him off. But Merciless was so quick, he was still able to run his part of the stunt to allow McKinney to get to the quarterback. And, you know, McKinney, I don't think Merciless had a sack on the day. McKinney did. But Merciless made that sack happen because he was quick enough to take out his guy, to get to his guy, to create confusion, to allow McKinney to hook in and get the sack. It was just such a spectacular play because Merciless was surprised. He was hit very hard. and that happened. And on the converse side of it is that, you know, we had so many problems with Joey Bosa, and I see CJF lined up outside of Chris Clark with Bosa lined up, and I'm going, he's got to chip him, right? Clark's struggling. CJF has got to go chip. No, he didn't chip him. So the Chargers adjusted their scheme to with a freaking wide receiver who's not very large, and we couldn't do the same with CJ Fedorowicz to help chip, to slow down pass rushers. So I know that was supposed to be all about the J.J. Watt favorite play of the game, but I kind of made that a little bit about Bob because I want to keep hammering that point home. This is about Bob.
Yeah. I mean, the Texans really don't chip that often. And I think probably they trust their tackles. And also, I think they want to have as many receivers go out for passes as unencumbered as possible, give Osweiler as many options as he can, and hope that one of the guys can get wide open. Because Osweiler can make wide open throws. It's the close throws and tight coverage that he's trouble with or leads to interceptions. My favorite play, I know that McKinney sack was really cool. What they liked about that sack from McKinney was that he didn't do any pass rush moves. It was all lower body strength, driving in hands, and just swatting and not giving up the play. And Tim Wally gets to Rivers in that one, and that was a good one. Mine was the Whitney Merciless' first tackle for a loss. I mean, he had a great game on the edge, in the run game especially, where he dips underneath the double team completely, splits it, plants, and then dives right into the backfield and brings down Melvin Gordon, like, instantly. Like, it was such a great burst, bend, and, you know, read and react, and it was just instant. And I think if you have any – in my, you know, the one thing about Clowney that I don't like this year is he's just not finishing plays like that. Like, Clowney will get in the backfield like that, but he's just not making the tackles. And see, actually, like, some tackles for a loss from Merciless – and him make a play that quick and that, you know, explosive was just a really welcome sight to see.
Yeah, that's a great example. That was Whitney Merciless. When he was in the league the first couple of years, he was a great run stopper. But again, you don't draft a guy in the first round to play outside linebacker for you to be a run stopper. You play, you pay that, you draft that guy, pay that guy to get to the quarterback. And it was nice to see his evolution into a pass rusher. And I'm really hoping at some point we see the same from Clowney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't have anything else on the defense. What about you?
No, done.
The only other thing I have to add about this game is there's actually a decision Bill O'Brien made that I loved, and that was kicking the field goal with, you know, 30 seconds left or whatever. Once they got to Nick Novak's range, they kicked that 45-yard field goal and they made it. Rather than you dick around, waste time trying to get the touchdowns you may never get and let that precious clock drip away, they kicked the field goal, did the onside kick, and then knew that, all right, if we get this, now we have to score the touchdown. And it didn't work, you know, but Osweiler wasn't able to throw a 55-yard touchdown pass to win it or a 45-yard touchdown pass to win it. But just that decision to kick the field goal sooner rather than you're trying to score a touchdown, waste the clock, and they kicked the field goal anyways on fourth down was, you know, really good to see. And I hope that in the future, if there's a game that comes up where there's a minute and a half left, and, you know, in the same similar situation, I really hope the Texans don't try to screw – I hope they do that exact same strategy because that's what all coaches should do in that part of the game at that time.
Yeah, that's the one of the very few times I'll ever agree with the field goal is that you're going to have to score twice. Let's get the sure thing. It doesn't matter if you get the – you know, it's yes, you're going to be more stressed, but you're either going to burn time by trying to get the touchdown, or you can just kick it now, do the onside kick, hope you win it. There's a little bit more assurance. You're upping your chances to win a little bit better by making that decision. So, yeah, I agree. I hate field goals, too. I hate Bill O'Brien's penchant to kick field goals over touchdowns.
Yeah. Well, that's all I have on this game. So now we'll go ahead and do our playoff watch. The football size playoff ratings are updated. So right now, Houston 6-5 in first place. They're half game up on Tennessee at 6-6. Indy's in third place at 5-6. If we look at mean wins, Tennessee's first at 8.2 mean wins. Houston's second at 7.9. Indy's third at 7.2. If we look at total playoff probabilities, Houston's first at 42.3%. Tennessee's at 38.6%. And they actually jumped 22.1% after the win in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And then Indy's at 20.7% there in third. And then I'm going to pull up the remaining schedule numbers real fast, too. because I think that's one of the keys as well whenever we look at this part of the year. Like, you look at Miami's won six games in a row just because they haven't really played anybody. And so the future schedule, you know, it really plays a huge important part in how, you know, this kind of playoff race may kind of end up. So Houston, their future schedule is -8% DVOA, which is 31st. A lot of that is, you know, I do think Cincinnati is probably better than the record indicates. And but the rest is because they're playing the AFC South. Then Tennessee's future schedule is -7.7%, which is 30th. And then Indianapolis's is -11.4%, which is 32nd. So Houston, Tennessee, Indianapolis at the moment are pretty much playing identical schedules. They each have the third easiest schedule. They each have the easiest schedules left from here on out. And so this division is going to come down to, you know, them cannibalizing each other, them having to eat each other up. And whoever wins the most games in the division from here on out is the team that's going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. That's just where we're at this point of the year is, do we beat the BESS in Mesopotamia? I mean, I really think right now that the entire season comes down to that game because they have to still play the Chiefs and the Broncos. Those are going to be two very tough games. I think they have a chance against the Chiefs because they're so banged up right now, but against the Broncos, I don't see that happening. The Colts still have Andrew Luck. He's going to be back this week. I believe he's out of the concussion protocol at this point. So everybody's got tough matchups, but I think it's really going to come down to who is the best team in the AFC South right now. And the answer to that question is the BSFs. They've got the best point differential. I never thought I would say this, but their offensive scheme, this exotic smash mouth,
hell yeah,
is working because and it's working because their coach, who Mike Mularkey, who I think came into this year with a 2-88 record as a professional head coach in the NFL, that might be wrong or I might be right, I'm not sure, that it's actually working. And it's like they're going to take football back to 1973. But with Brock Osweiler and Blake Bortles and Ryan Grigson in the division, it's actually effective because the AFC South is a giant dumpster fire of trash. So, you know, here we go.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that changed out their scheme is they throw the ball downfield to counteract with their power run scheme. And once they start completing passes downfield, it's really just been, you know, remarkable how much better they've been. But I told you, you know, exotic meth mouth is pretty good. And I agree, too, that Tennessee's playing the best football in the division at the moment. And I don't know if things may come to week 17. I think this week against Green Bay is going to be the biggest game of the year so far. And we'll get to that in a second. But before we do our game preview, we have a couple more viewer questions that I want to get to as well. This one is from Nash Meister that I accidentally missed. He has two. The first one is pretend that the cap hits are identical and you're obligated to start them next year as long as they're healthy. Would you rather have Brock Osweiler or Christian Hackenberg be the starter next year?
I love, you know, only Nash would actually ask that question. Only he would have that the personality, number one, Nash, to ask that question. And number two, the humor to ask that question, because you know it's going to piss me off. I'm going to select C, none of the above. Sorry, Nash. I mean, you're asking me to pick between, like, the firing squad and the electric chair, dude.
Yeah, I'd be all for Hackenberg if he was paid $1.1 million instead of $18 million. But because of, you know, where they're at, I would rather go with Osweiler because at least you know he can make some throws downfield. The run game's good enough. And the other question he had, let's play a game of cut, restructure, or extend with the veterans, Brian Cushing, Jonathan Joseph, and Dwayne Brown. So who would you cut of those three? Who would you restructure of those three? And who would you extend of those three?
I think I would restructure. I don't know their contracts off the top of my head. I think I would restructure all three. Cushing's clearly not the same guy. I mean, at this point in his career, he is a below-average linebacker. Maybe average. He's physically not the same. He just really isn't. Dwayne Brown is still effective as a left tackle, but if you're the front office, you better be thinking, who's my left tackle of the future? Because that guy certainly isn't on the roster. Jonathan Joseph. Look, you know, I love me some J. Joe. I thought when we signed him, That was the year of Darrell Revis was also a free agent, and we signed Jonathan Joseph for a much better contract than Darrell Revis. And Joseph, at this point in time, is a better quarterback. Yeah, that was a heck of a sign. That was just fantastic. So at some point, Father Time wins. He's not winning yet, so I would restructure all three. I'd want to keep all three. I want all three on the field for me. I wouldn't cut any of them, but I certainly would not extend at their ages.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with the restructuring, all you're doing is getting the bonus later on to free up cap room currently. Now I have the numbers off in my head, and I don't want to go to the internet and pull up the numbers because it may slow down the connection as well, too. But for a cut, I would say Brian Cushing, just because, you know, Najee McKinney's really good. Cushing's not. He's an okay coverage guy, but McKinney's doing so much work in between the tackles and the run game that – You know, Cushing's impact is a lot smaller. And also, like I said, you know, old Max has the elbow brace, and he's coming for Brian Cushing's spot. So I would cut him for sure. I would probably extend Dwayne Brown. Tackles are able to play as they get older, you know, better than defensive backs do. And, you know, Dwayne Brown has shown he's been really good in the run game this year. He's shown he's still good in the pass game. And, I mean, obviously he's going to get worse as he gets older, but he's already still playing very, very well so far this year since he's come back from that really nasty quad injury. And then I guess I would restructure Jonathan Joseph. I believe he only has like two more years left. And I think Joseph could have some sort of like a, man, Terrence Newman sort of career where he can be this old, wily veteran, which he already kind of is, but you add two more years to Jonathan Joseph. And I still think he could be a good, like, you know, number four corner or, you know, a good dime package corner. You can still make plays happen just because he's so smart. He understands his body so well as far as, you know, where to place it, when to knock the ball away. And, you know, he's been really good again this year too. So those are my three answers for one.
And I think that's a great answer for him. A great comp too is Terrence Newman. I expected Terrence Newman to be done a couple of years ago, but he's kept his speed. He's the outlier, and there are outliers that actually happen, and Jonathan Joseph really kind of does seem to be that outlier, that guy who can play a little bit longer than anybody else in a very physically demanding position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Terrence Newman, I think when you give Jonathan Joseph as much red wine as possible and say, hey, just drink two glasses of sweet baby, just do what Terrence Newman does, and you're gonna be riding high for a while longer. Now, we have another question from Damon Dan. He said a computer Pelgrimi plays has a character named Dick Whistle. And he says, give this as a nickname to someone in the Texans organization, whether it's a player, a coach, or someone in the front office. He says he chooses Osweiler so he can call him Dick Whistle after every crappy pass, and it makes him chuckle and gives him some hope in such a futile existence that is to be a Texans fan.
I appreciate that, Dan. I'm going to have to say Bill O'Brien. I really am. I'm at this point, after seeing just the same pounding the head against the keyboard kind of action, I'm done with it. I'm really done with it. So I'm going to say Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, I'm going to go a little more specific. I'd say Bill O'Brien's chin. I mean, you can call that ridiculous.
Damn.
We have three questions from Captain Ron. So the first, what will be the record next year for the University of Texas Longhorns, the University of Houston Cougars, and the Houston Texans? I don't watch college football at all, so I would just say I think right now I'd say the Texans are probably going to be – I don't even know who their schedule is next year. But I would say probably a 9-win team, you know. I think that's just such a good average median you can say every year with what they do currently.
Oh, I'm not even ready to have that conversation yet, just to be honest. Sorry, Ron. Haven't gotten that far yet.
The second one, would the Texans offense be performing better with Tom Herman as an offensive coordinator or head coach?
I think the Texans offense would be performing better with me as their offensive coordinator.
Yeah, that's right.
I went there. So stupid. It's such a poor scheme. They don't set up anything. They don't look to the future for anything. They don't set up anything. If it's so freaking complex that nobody can run it, why run it? I mean, you're talking about football players, not rocket scientists. I'm not saying football players are dumb, but yeah, you got to give them something they can work with. Give them something repeatable that's easy to do. Look at what the BSS do. They dumbed it down and they're successful. We're so complicated we can't run Jack. Yes, I will take charge of the offense, and I'll do better. Boom.
Yeah, it can't be much worse. You know, really, they're already 32nd DVOA. They already struggle to score more than 20 points every single game. And his third question, I'll ask him whenever. Let's see. I think we have one here from UT. He said, "What are your? We had a new SB Nation thing that went out, and we have to have a two-factor authorization." And he said, "What are our thoughts on that?" And I really hate all this stuff. You know, I just think the password's good enough. I don't want all this complicated new stories, all these things I have to do. And like my cell phone, I hate using it enough as it is. I'm gonna have something bing and then do something else. And also, I tap all my open threads. I'm hungover with one eye open at 9 o'clock in the morning. And that's going to be a lot harder to do, having to make sure my phone's charged and it dings and then got to do the next thing. So I hate it. I'm mad.
Once again, I'll go back to my IT security background. You secure certain things. Okay, so for those of you who work in oil and gas, and there's a lot of you I know who listen to this who work in those industries, and you look at the grid, the energy grid, you don't want any guy to be able to access, say, any station, whether transmission or generation or that sort of thing. You want to secure those assets very well. This is a freaking sports blog, okay? This is not life or death type stuff. This is not we're going to shut down the electricity. This is not we're going to get a hold of Social Security numbers. This is not we're going to get your banking account. This is a sports blog. So dual factor auth is just so silly. It's funny, too, because I'll just say that I have three levels of passwords. Level number one is uber complex, usually 16 characters that are randomly generated. That's my bank account. That's my whatever, the important stuff. Level number two is if you get it, good for you. Not complex. Oh, they're all complex, but they're basic. They're not going to be that tricky. They're, you know, 8 to 10 long. Who cares? Level number three is I don't really give a poop if you want to go post as big fat drunk on battleredblog.com. Look, here's my password. Go knock yourself out. I'll even give it to you for crikey's sake. Go have fun. I'll change it later. Just don't change it on me so I can get a hold of it again. That's what I use for Battle Red Blog. It is 6 digits long. Ah, I've already gone spent too much time on that, but it's just so silly. It's so silly. Here's my password. Oh my God.
I really the only thing it prevents, I know when I was in school, and you know, me and my friends have grown up some, so this doesn't happen as often. But you would leave your computer open if you have a password locked on it, you'd show up the next day and some despicable image would be the background. You know, you show up in class the next day, you open up your computer, and there's someone been logged into your background, you know, things like that. And so I think the password change, the only thing it makes sure is that, you know, somebody's dumb friend doesn't, you know, you're not logged in. They can go on your SB Nation thing, make a post that says, hey, you know, genocide isn't that bad. And I think that's the one thing it protects from any sort of, silly prank. But really, that's all it does. And I'm not looking forward to make things more complicated than they need to be. But so here we're going to do a game preview now. And this week, Houston gets the 5-6 Green Bay Packers. Right now, the Packers are a game and a half behind Detroit for the division. They're still hanging on to the wild card race. And the Packers really need to win this game. And it's also in Green Bay as well, too. And so last night on Monday Night Football, Rodgers made some oh-my-God throws against one of the best defenses in the NFL. And he was the main reason why they won. And did you know that Aaron Rodgers is still pretty good? As every tweet that was tweeted during that game mentioned. And so how afraid are you of this reawoken, you scary Aaron Rodgers playing against Houston this weekend?
I got to say, it's scary. He is a very good quarterback. His motion has gotten a little funky as he's gotten older, but with that kind of little skip hop he does before he throws. While he's throwing, I don't even know how to say that. But he's still a very, very good for a quarterback. He's still going to be extremely accurate when he's hot. He's still going to push the ball downfield, which I think is what he's starting to do more and more this year. As this season has gone on, he's gotten more comfortable doing that as Jordy Nelson's gotten healthy. Now, Aaron Rodgers is terrifying. Even against our defense, he's absolutely terrifying. If you're going to sit there and say, oh, yeah, he's not going to beat us. No, he could beat us. As good as our defense has been, this is the sort of game that can shut us up real quickly. So, yeah, it's a scary, scary game.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about Rodgers, too, like, I won't question the Texans' ability to cover anybody for the rest of the year. Like, I'm 100% convinced they're great at it. I'm not worried about, you know, Devontae Adams being Houston. What I'm worried about is Aaron Rodgers' ability to, like, curve the football like in that movie Wanted, where he just plays the football wherever he wanted to. And he did that against Philadelphia twice last time, his touchdown throws, where he just can put the ball right past an arm or a foot or any appendage that your mind wants to go to. And just like the ball placement is so spectacular that he's able to throw pass coverage. He's able to throw guys open. And that's what I'm worried about. Especially, I think he's going to have a lot of time to throw, too. Green Bay has a very good pass-blocking offensive line, and the Texans have had problems, you know, getting pressure, being one versus one blocks. And I think they're going to spread everything out. It's going to be a lot of Clowney. You're going to have to beat Bhatikari. Merciless, you're going to have to beat their right tackle. You know, McKinney, we're going to have to see some really good stunts inside from you. So I think that's the issue there. So I think Rodgers has a lot of time to throw, and he's going to throw the ball 55 times in this game. They're not going to, you know, run the ball. And they've been very bad this year. And so I'm just worried about, you know, Rodgers just being, you know, incredible. And again, it goes back to, if the defense gives up more than 20 points, the Texans are probably going to lose this game. And so if you're going to pick the Texans, you think the Texans are going to win, or for the Texans to win, they're going to have to hold Aaron Rodgers to less than 20 points, which is, you know, something that's kind of like unthinkable to have happen.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. They're just too good. The problem is it's the matchups. They have a lot of guys that can throw at us. Devontae Adams was absolutely fantastic. Jared Cook is healthy. It's the guys that have gotten healthy. The Packers were really struggling when they were hurt. Right now, their biggest question is Clay Matthews, who's pretty overrated. But he's the biggest question they've got on the field right now. But Demarius Randall is healthy. That's where they've been really hurting is the cornerback play. But he's going to play this week. Morgan Furnett's missed time this year. He's going to play this week. So they've got a lot of talent that's getting healthy all of a sudden, which is kind of odd in the NFL to get healthy this time of year. James Starks is back. They signed Christian Michael. This is not as good of a matchup as it was maybe even 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, or even a week ago, too, as well. And
even a week ago,
again, like,
yeah.
And when Houston's on defense, too, I just want to – I really think it's going to be a game where Rodgers is the ball 50 times. They're – rush offense is terrible. Their run blocking is really bad. They're not driving anybody, which is strange. Their offensive line has been such a good focal point, but they've had injuries on the interior. And the other thing, too, is they don't have any running backs. You know, Ty Montgomery, a wide receiver, is their running back this year, and he's not very good. They signed Christian Michael. He still has to learn the offense, and that hasn't happened yet. And so maybe Christian Michael has a huge game or something, but that's, you know, a very rare chance to have happen. So I think it's just going to be a lot of Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball. And it's going to be, you know, how well Houston can cover. But, again, I think it's more, can Aaron Rodgers kind of score 28 points on his own? And he's done it before, and there's that chance for it to happen again this week, too. And on defense, like you mentioned, they were injured. They're starting to get healthy. And they were awful, you know, awful, awful before last week's game. So before the game against Philadelphia, they gave up 33, 31, 47, 42 points. And the most points Houston has scored this year so far is 27. Could Brock Osweiler in this passing offense breakthrough against Green Bay's defense? And again, Green Bay's defense is very good stopping the run. Their average is stopping the pass. And so is this a game where Brock Osweiler can score 27 points, can lead this offense to that many, or is it just too much to ask for?
Oh, it's way too much to ask for.
Not say anything else.
Right. I mean, the thing is, again, Demetrius Randall's healthy. Morgan Furnett's healthy. They've gotten a lot healthier over the past couple of weeks, and that's a really big deal. And I think that's the difference maker for this team defensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it hasn't happened yet. And so I'm kind of one of the firm believers. Like, you can look at the film. You can look and see where exploitations could be, where they're, you know, losing things. You say, this is something that can potentially happen. I think Quinn Tempest is a good example. I wrote about in the beginning of the year, talked on this podcast, that Quinn Demps is a big hole on this defense. It just – nobody was attacking him, and it happened now. And so now that's something that you should have to look forward to, maybe have problems with. And the thing with this offense is that, yeah, they could score 27 points against the Packers defense, but they just haven't done it yet. And so until that happens, I don't expect it to happen. And I think it's just going to be a lot of Osweiler throwing the ball. I think Lamar Miller is going to average – 3 yards a carry against this Packers run defense. Mike Adams is huge. They don't have anybody in the interior that can move Mike Adams. And they're going to run the ball up the middle, and it's not going to work. And I think if you're going to have a game where they have to run outside, this is going to be the game. And they're constantly going the ball, they're constantly running up the middle for nothing, and they're not going at the tackles, at the edge. I just don't see Houston being able to score at all, because then Osweiler's going to have to throw the ball, you know, 45 times in this game. And then you turn this game into Osweiler versus Aaron Rodgers. And I think the answer to that competition is fairly easy.
Yeah, and so I've been waiting for my final rant of the evening. I kind of had some rants lined up.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So, because that's how I am. So the other day, I went back and thinking about the Lamar Miller, using him the way that we asked him to put on weight, and if that's what you need from a back in the NFL to stay healthy and stay on the field, if that's a good idea, because if you put on weight, you do two things. Number one, you're going to lose your long speed. You just kind of are. Number two, you're going to put more stress on your joints. These aren't inarguable things. These are real life things that happen when you put on more weight. So I went back and I looked at the top 20 running backs in NFL history, and looking at the types of backs that have had the most rushes. And there's only like five of the top 20 where the guys like John Riggins. The thing is that you're asking Lamar Miller to put on a lot of weight to be stronger, but most of the guys who have been successful are guys like Emmitt Smith and Curtis Martin and Barry Sanders. So it seems to me that putting on weight and being bigger is not a prerequisite to being a successful long-term running back in the NFL, but that yet, that's what the Texans asked Lamar Miller to do in the offseason. So, you know, that's the disconnect that I look at. When I look at the talent that's on the roster and I look at what the effect has been with the play calling and the usage and those sorts of things, it gets me fired up because it's stupid. And it's just another stupid thing, and it's ready. I'm done with Bill O'Brien at this point in time. I'm completely done with Bill O'Brien. I wanted him back in 2014. I want him, stupid mosquito, I want him gone now. So let's be done with it.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it incredible that we're having mosquitoes still almost towards December? When I was in West Texas, I got bit up by them pretty good because there was one really warm day. I had sunburn on Saturday there. I lay by the river and
Wow. Spread.
And got summer out there. I'm not sure if I was swimming some, but we're not really swimming, just sitting in the water, reading the road and crying. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you on the run game. There's no argument there. If you want to use Lamar Miller like Alfred Blue, you already have Alfred Blue. Let Lamar Miller do his best. They haven't done that with him. Yeah, and they kind of turn him into that. And so we also just watched Phillip Rivers. This week we get to see Aaron Rodgers. So how jealous are you of the other teams who have good quarterbacks since we've been starved for the last 4 years? And who's your favorite quarterback in the NFL?
Yes, I mean I've had a case of QB blue balls for quite a while, pretty much since about 2012, really. I've had a case of QB blue balls, maybe 2011 even, because we could see a bunch of people. I was one. I'd like to claim that because I'm awesome and special, that I could see Matt Schaub going uphill pretty quickly, which was not expected. He was an unathletic quarterback without a great arm. It's not surprising that somebody like with that skill set, physical skill set, goes downhill quickly. It just isn't. I'm jealous. Who's my favorite quarterback in the NFL? I really got to say, the one guy, and he's having a poor year this year, but my favorite guy to watch, pure quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. My favorite guy to watch as a quarterback is Cam Newton. I absolutely love the guy. He plays with such a passion. The arm strength is unbelievable. He's having a poor year, but I just adore watching him. I love watching his emotion on the field. If I played at that level with that skill set, that would be me, and I'm super jealous of that.
Yeah. I mean, Nunez, like he has my favorite arm to watch. Just like watching him throw a 15-yard out, and just like the missile that comes out there is near remarkable. My favorite quarterback to watch though is Phillip Rivers, and it's because he plays unlike anybody else. The accuracy is awesome. Decision making is awesome. But it's just like the condensed pockets he throws from. Like it's like he's running through a hallway and there's just zombies in prison cells with their arms sticking out, hanging out, and he just sprints through them all. Nothing really phases him. And he's also so slow, too, to, like, watch him escape the pocket and kind of gallop around and make things happen is just hilarious and makes me laugh every time. And also, you talk about a guy with emotion. Like, he's constantly spitting, and his head's red the entire time, and he's screaming. And I don't think he curses at all, and so he's just constantly just yelling, gosh darn it, at the top of his lungs as well as possible, which is just, you know, hilarious to imagine a football field out there in the field just, you know, cursing like a six-year-old. And, I mean, he also just makes some great throws, too. Like that Houston game, there was four or five throws he made where I was just like, you know, just Christ, like, you know, that's unbelievable. And it's just watching a guy who's been so good, or, you know, who is really good, just makes some really great plays. And I think, and it also kind of bums me out, too, because he's going to be a guy who's the farthest he ever went to the AFC Championship, and he played on a torn ACL in that game against New England, and he's had his team let down around him. And then this year, the Chargers are really good, too, and they just had awful luck. They lost all those close games, and it's just been kind of a mess. But hopefully next year they get that bump in fortune and they become a playoff team again, because I really want to see Philip Rivers in the playoffs one or two more times before his career is over. And I just really love watching that play.
That his throws are so ugly. I mean, it's like shot put city. I don't know how he's so accurate, but it's just repetition.
Yeah,
he throws
sense.
Every ball thrown the same way. It's so funny to watch it. It somehow works and good for him, but it's an ugly throw. But what can you say? Some people can do it.
Yeah. All right. So our prediction for Sunday's game, they're playing at noon, I believe. And so for the Cecil Shorts Memorial Pick'em Contest. Cecil Shorts is still alive.
So much trouble.
He's no longer with us in the Texan sense. I'm 7-3. I'm gonna say I am MBW because I'm stupid. I'm 7-3. You're 5-5. And I think if I win this year, I think I'm gonna get something, because I think I'm just like the ultimate thing that'll probably make you mad to really, you know, put your face in the white dog poop if I end up pulling it out. I only ahead of myself. But I go first. I have Green Bay winning 24, Houston scoring 17. And I think it's going to be another one-possession game. I think the defense is good enough to hold Aaron Rodgers to that, you know, 21 to 28 range. I don't think he's going to put 45 or 35 or 31. I think it's going to be a 3-4 touchdown game from them. And I'll just throw the field goal in there as well.
Okay. I'm going to say
that's
that
the problem
I really –
with this team moving forward against good teams.
Yeah, sorry, you're cut out there, so I thought you stopped. Sorry about that. I'm going to say 31-17, Green Bay. If anybody can hit, my biggest concern of this game is that Aaron Rodgers knows where to throw the ball, and Randall Cobb is getting healthy again too. In addition to everybody else we've talked about, so you got Jordy Nelson getting over his ACL surgery, you got Randall Cobb getting healthy, you got Devontae Adams. That's a lot of guys to cover. I don't know if the Texans can do it, especially in the middle of the field, because they've also got to take care of Jared Cook. It's a lot to ask for, and they're going to have a hard time getting Aaron Rodgers, I think. So I don't see this one as a happy ending, but with a bigger score, 31-17.
Okay, yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. But, yeah, that's all I have for tonight. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for all of your questions. They're all very good. Thank you, Nash, and damn it, Dan, and UT, and Ron, for the questions tonight. We'll be back on next week at 7 o'clock as well on Tuesday, and we'll talk about the game against Green Bay and also the upcoming game against Cincinnati, too, as well. And thank you for being on again tonight, BFD. And if you like this show, tell your friends. I'm sure you told them all over Thanksgiving. I'm sure you listen to us as you're in your car on the way to wherever you're going. And also, if you like the show, rate and review us on iTunes or tell your friends and give us 5 stars and give us a lot of kind words, because the only reason why BFD is still with us to this day is because of all the compliments you get from this podcast. So keep them alive, keep feeding them, and we'll keep doing the show for forever. But, again, we'll be back on next week at 7 o'clock. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being on BFD. My name is Matt West, and thank you for listening to Bell Red Radio.
Woo!
I thought it was pretty.